from In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to The Next Step with Father Vasquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vasquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. No, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vasquez, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 243 of The Next Step. This is a podcast that looks at the very nature of our being, looks at life through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy polished up for today. We call that polished look Armadoxy. We're inviting you to take a look with us. Take a next step with us. This podcast is being brought to you by epostle.net. Apostolic Evangelism for an Expanding and Electronic Universe. Hey, if you're ready, let's take the next step. Coming to you today from the Western Campus of Epostle World. Does that sound good? Yeah, we got to start delineating because we're all over the place. Of course, we have the Western and the Eastern. The Western being in Glendale, California, beautiful sunny day. And Eastern, we sometimes broadcast from Pasadena. And yes, that's right. The Far East for us would be Tempe, Arizona, because we broadcasted many shows from over there. But I'm delineating because we just started broadcasting as well from the Burbank area. Yes, you know that Burbank name. If you've flown into the Los Angeles area, it is one of the airports here in the area, Bob Hope Airport. But also, it is the town where the new cathedral just 2 years ago was consecrated, the Armenian Cathedral St. Leon sous Preventians. And in that cathedral, all kinds of activities taking place, including a small little corner in the basement area. We call it the lower level area, okay. We started the Datev Outreach, a program to combat and end domestic violence within the community. And I'm so proud of the work that's being done over there. So sometimes we take our laptops and microphones over there and we do some recording over there too. So that's a quick way of saying we've got the East, we've got the West, and let's call it the Northwest, okay? The Northwest area, which would be Burbank, California. And why not? You know, we've got all kinds of places. That's what technology affords us. It gives us an opportunity to be mobile, to go around. And, you know, well, that was one of the cool things that we saw at New Media Expo a couple weeks ago, was the ability to actually do these podcasts right on your phone or on a tablet, and very, very portable. I'm talking about like studios, portable studios. So it's exciting times right now, and we're taking advantage of all of this technology and all the goodness that God has graced us with, and really taking the word all around. I'm so glad you're with us today. Got a great show for you today. To share with you, first of all, for Dativ Outreach, a few weeks ago, you remember that the director of the program, the coordinator of the program, Anna Gasparian, was our guest. And I want to thank you all for your wonderful response to that interview, as well as all of your prayers. I can't tell you the blessings that we've seen there. I if you knew just half of the blessings that we've seen coming out of there, it would be enough to fill your life for a while. And I just thank God every day that we have this opportunity to work in this field. This past week, we've had Chris Brown. Yes, Chris Brown, big name artist. In many ways, we found out, I found out at least a hidden talent. I knew he had artistic abilities in music, in dance, but also he has put his brush to the canvas and produced a few beautiful pieces, one in particular that I really cared for. I'm going to share those with you in the coming weeks, but he's been doing this for the Inishoes Ministry, for Domestic Violence, for Dativ Outreach. Just a lot of good stuff happening, you know? When you pray, you got to remember that you got to be ready for the answers that come your way. You got to be ready for the answers. And I know, you know, in a few minutes, we're going to hear Anush doing her pomegranate. There's always the group. She's going to talk about this. And I don't know what. Last few days, too, people have been coming and giving me, like, yeah, well, you know what he really is like. Have you ever noticed that whenever something goes good, you'll find a disproportionate number of people who will come and tell you about how bad it is? Chris Brown is one of those things. You know, he's kind of like, he's got people with him, people against him, you know, and you're free, you know, that's part of being celebrity, I guess. The other day was kind of cute. We were standing in front of our church here in Glendale, and Chris Brown was painting a beautiful painting right in front of our church, and a couple little Armenian girls came by the youth center, the Armenian Church Youth Center here, and they started going, "It's Chris Brown!" And they started like jumping up and making and squealing. And of course, we're trying to keep it really low key because he's doing some work. He's doing a project for us. And we wanted to keep it really low key. So in Armenian, I turned to the girls and I go, "Girls, you know, please go to the other side of the street. We're trying to keep it down over here." And they just squealed even more, and they started pulling out their little cell phones and started texting their friends, I guess, you know. And just then, the bodyguard, Chris's bodyguard, came out of the truck, and he just, like, looked them up and down. And I got to tell you, these girls, they made a beeline out of there. They were out of there. And I guess that's part of the whole celebrity thing, isn't it, right? It's part of, like, you know, you got bodyguards, you got people coming up. I got to tell you, he was very gracious with so many people who came by and wanted to take picture. I guess the taking a picture, snapping a picture, Instagram, that's like the new autograph, right? Before, you used to go and ask a celebrity for his or her autograph. Now it's like, can we take a picture? Can we, you know, put you on Instagram, Facebook? Can we float you around with us? Images, you know, electronical images. And he was just very, very gracious about accepting his fans and taking those pictures. But the reason I'm saying all this is that there's always people who will find the negative, that no matter how good someone is, and you got to think about this in terms of what we preach here on Armadoxy, what we preach here as far as forgiveness. You know, we are all sinners. We all have some problems. And it's very easy to pick apart people based on their negativity. Can you find some goodness in people? Can you find that good streak in people and really capitalize on it and really build on it and say that, you know, we're all in this boat together. We all have our difficulties and we need to be able to emphasize the goodness. Now, think about this in terms of, there are some places, like, what was it? The other day I was thinking about this. Oh, McDonald's, okay? Golden Arches, you know, hamburgers, Big Macs. Have you noticed that everybody says, "Oh, I never eat at McDonald's. I won't go there. I don't eat at McDonald's." And yet, they are the largest food franchise, right, in the world. There is a McDonald's just about everywhere. But people put it down. Starbucks, same way, you know. "Oh, Starbucks, the coffee, yeah, it's this way or that way. You know, I prefer the roasted beans of Pete's or of whole beans," and stuff like that. Yeah, okay. But at the end, you know, people are in Starbucks. And then we start making up excuses. Well, the coffee's not good, but the ambiance is good. And I'm just using these as example with all due respect to everyone who sits at a McDonald's or sits at Starbucks. I'm just using these as examples of people finding, you know, the negative in things. Yeah, you can find negative in just about anything. In fact, we're trained to do that, aren't we? Tonight, open up your news. Open up your news broadcast. Open up a newspaper. Open up the internet. About your local town, what are they going to tell you? They're going to tell you about an accident that took place on the freeway. Now, they're not going to report that, you know, 10 million cars got home safely. They're going to report about the one car that got into an accident. Yeah, because that's the news. That's the way it's delineated. You talk about the negative stuff. Nobody's going to tell you that. Hey, 10 million people got home safely tonight, and they are home eating dinner with their families, watching a movie, going to bed, relaxed, and waking up the following morning. No, you hear about the one tragedy. And that's how we're conditioned. We're conditioned on this scale. So it's important to pick out good stuff. And I got to tell you, being in Glendale, being an Armenian priest in Glendale and seeing day in and day out, it's very easy to get caught up with all the negativity that's around. But there are some beautiful gems that are out there. Let me share this with you, too. What is it like being a priest in Glendale? I want to share this story with you for a few reasons. First of all, sometimes people are amazed at the different dynamics of parish life, especially my clergy brother, who are in, let's say, more established churches. You like that? Yeah, that's a little bit more, that's, I think, the politically correct way of saying some things that we can't say otherwise, okay? Some clergy brothers that are in more established communities, okay? They'll be in awe of some of the things that happen as a priest, some of the things that we experience here as a priest. So I want to share this story with you, and it also leads as a segment, because we're going to be talking about Jerusalem in a few minutes. We're going to be talking about the new patriarch in Jerusalem. So let me throw this out as a prelude story to that. So this takes place last night. I'm coming out of the church and the church sanctuary, locking up. It's the end of the day, and two women approach us, and they say, is the office closed? We were going to go in and talk about a baptism for tomorrow. And I said, well, the office is closed, but what's going on tomorrow? Tell me what's happening, and we could just set up some time right now. And they said, well, we're having a baptism this Sunday, and the godfather is not baptized. So the godfather wants to come in tomorrow, get baptized, so that he can be a godfather for Sunday service. Okay, this is when, you know, the light bulbs start going off in my head. And I'm not talking about light bulbs of good ideas. I'm talking about, like, hey, who allowed this? Who signed up a baptism for Sunday when the godfather is not even a baptized member? And you say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, here's what's wrong. I mean, it's just basically a logical explanation to it, which is the godfather has to be baptized and confirmed, has to be a member of the church, because the godfather is the sponsor of that child, the sponsor who brings that child into the church, who presents that child to the church. So, well, who can accept a member of the church, somebody who's baptized and confirmed? I mean, you know, that's true in anything. Think about your fraternities and sororities. Think about any, you know, I mean, imagine you're going to be bringing somebody into the group. Well, who are you? Well, I'm a member of that group. Oh, okay, then you can bring somebody into the group. Same way, into the Christian church. You have to be a member of that Christian church. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to bring somebody in. When you're not a member, it also shows, you know, lack of belief on your part. So right away, I'm thinking, like, okay, what's going on? Somebody's got a baptism this Sunday, and the godfather is not baptized. Okay, so I turned to them and I said, well, why don't we talk about it, and maybe we can baptize the godfather first, since everyone's going to be there, and then after that we can baptize the child. And this would give me a little bit of time between now and Sunday to talk with the man, to find out what his story is. You know, I'm basically trying to find a way of getting around this situation and at the same time staying faithful to my calling of making the family understand what's going on, making people understand what baptism is, what faith, hope, and love is, what the power of Christ is, and what entry into the Christian family means, not only for the child, but for the godfather. And, you know, meanwhile, like I'm saying, in the back of my head, like, who's approved this? How did this get on the calendar without us knowing about it? So the family, these two ladies, they turn to me and they say, well, the godfather doesn't want a lot of people to know. I said, know what? Know that he hasn't been baptized. I says, well, there's no sin in that. Well, he's embarrassed. He doesn't want to stand and be baptized in front of people. And of course, you know right where my head went, right? I'm sorry, but that's basically what Christ said, right? He said, whoever acknowledges me before others, I will also acknowledge before my Father in heaven. And whoever doesn't acknowledge me, I mean, okay, you're going to be embarrassed in front of people then about being a Christian? And I turned to her and I said that. I mean, I'm sorry, I can't help you out. If he's embarrassed about being a Christian in front of his family and friends, doesn't mean anything. I said, I can't do this. I can't do this service. I can't do this. And so she said, well, you know, and so in my head, I'm saying, okay, let me see. Before I crack down on this, you know, I'm talking to two ladies here on the street. What I need to do is talk to this boy, talk to this godfather. So I said, okay, listen. I said, tomorrow, have him come in. Have him come to the office and talk to me in the morning, and we'll see. We'll do something. We'll do something, but I need to talk with him. I said, have him come in. And they said, oh, thank you very much. And they said, well, what does it cost? Yep, that's basically what it comes down to. What does it cost? And I said, well, there is no cost. This is baptism. You can't put a price on baptism. I know, they said, but what does it cost? I said, I'm sorry, but there is no cost to baptism. There is no price on it. Have them come in. They said, okay, well, we want to make a donation to the church. I said, that's not necessary at this point because, of course, you're going to have the baptism on Sunday. Meanwhile, you know, as a priest, I'm trying to figure out, just let's get this guy in here so I could talk to him. There's going to be a baptism on Sunday, and, you know, somebody's goofed up accepting this baptism with a godfather who's not baptized. And they turned to me and they said, well, our baptism isn't going to be here on Sunday. And I just, first of all, sigh of relief that nobody on my staff had approved of this baptism in such a way. But in the other sense, I just looked at it and thought of it as the humor of Glendale. That's what it's been, and that's what it's about. I mean, you have churches here that are basically selling sacraments. And here are these people just very plainly, they're having a big baptism someplace at one of the other churches, and they want to covertly come and baptize the godfather. So let's go on this little corner place in Glendale and baptize. And I just looked at him and said, you know, you need to go and talk to the priest that's doing this baptism. I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you with stuff like this. And it's very sad. It's very sad. And trust me, I know there's going to be some people out there saying that, well, you should have insisted, brought the kid. You know what? At some point, you have to realize that these people are looking for a product which you cannot deliver. And that's really the sadness of this. And the reason I'm using this story right now is because we're going to be talking about Jerusalem in a few minutes. And I know many people who've been to Jerusalem will find it as a very orderly system. Orderly in the sense that there are ranks, there are classes, and you say, well, what does this have to do with Christianity? What does this have to do with the lost sheep? Just like this young man. Okay, first of all, it's not the young man who is coming. It is people around him who are looking to put on a show. Okay? They're not interested in the baptism. They're not interested in baptizing people in the salvation of souls. Just last week, I told you, I got back from Martin Luther King retreat. Do you know the first two things that happened when I got back into Glendale? One of them was I overheard this man coming in to the church and saying, I need a time to baptize my kids because I've already reserved the spot at the hall. This is true. at the hall, and I've made a deposit on the band. So in other words, the convenience factor is not the priest, it is not the sacrament, but the convenience factor is the band and the hall. Those have been arranged. Now let's take care of the peripheral stuff, which is baptizing the kid. And the second one was just exactly that same day, some lady who came in and said, I want to see the baptism font. I want to see how it'll look at this particular time because we're going to have a photographer. Again, it's the show. And the big challenge for us as clergy, as priests, as the church is really education, is really educating people into understanding that for all these years you've heard one thing, but you've got to realize that there's something greater here, that there is something greater than the temple, as Jesus would say, and that is the salvation of your soul. That is eternal life. And we're going to talk about all that coming up in a few minutes. Hey, I start off every show with a song. Here's an artist you haven't heard in a while. Mariam Matosian doing Noryerk, the new song. Is called Noryerk. The artist is Mariam Matosian. That is off of her In the Light album. We will put a link on our show notes today, so you'll make sure that you can check out all of her good music. I mean, wonderful. We had a chance to see her a few years ago down here in the Southern California area. Incredible talent, incredible music. So, new song, Noryerk. And it is a new day, it is a new song, especially in Jerusalem, as they have picked a new patriarch. You remember last week, we were finishing up our show when we got a late-breaking news item. Yes! You know me, I'm a sucker for these kind of jingles. Oh, I love that. Anyway, we got a late breaking news item that the new Patriarch of Jerusalem had been selected, had been elected. And that news came to us by Dr. Harry Hagopian. And the reason I'm remembering him also is because since that time, he has written a few pieces, and he has also done a very informative small little video clip that is available on CivilNet. We will put a link to all of his sites, to his blogs, to his interview, and I really heartily encourage everyone to really listen in on this because it's very fascinating, very, very interesting on the selection process and how it comes about. It's much more than just an election because there's politics, there is governments involved, there's all kinds of factors. So really, really listen in, and I appreciate Dr. Hagopian's work on in this end and his informative way of capturing the story and bringing it to our attention. So we will put those links on today's show notes, and please do follow them. What I'd like to do in the podcast today is talk a little bit about the office, not so much about the person, the personalities involved, as much as the office and how it plays in within the entire structure of the Armenian Church. It is the Patriarch of Jerusalem is arguably probably one of the most powerful men in the Armenian Church, and I know right away people are going to say, well, what about the Catholicos? Yes, we do have a Catholicos, and hierarchically there is a position, the Catholicos, but within Jerusalem you have the ability to be, well, at the points of where all points converge, right? You have the Jewish, the Christian, the Muslim, all converging on this small little city, Jerusalem. And within that city, within that old city, interestingly enough, there are four quarters. And listen to this. Interestingly enough, you have a Christian quarter, you have a Jewish quarter, you have a Muslim quarter. And what's the fourth one? Well, that's the Armenian quarter. Yeah, I know. You're saying, wait a minute. What did you say again? Okay, the Muslim quarter, the Jewish quarter. We don't qualify there. There's the Christian quarter. Okay, well, hey. But there's the fourth one, which is the Armenian quarter. Okay, the Armenian quarter. It's a separate life over there. It's a world in itself. And listen to this. You know, last week, a good member of our congregation came back and told me that he and a friend from the Indian Church, Indian Orthodox Church, I've spoken to you in the past about that, had gone to a retreat, and they were refused communion at an Orthodox retreat because, you know, the Greeks and the so-called greater Orthodox had refused to accept him as an Armenian or as an Indian Orthodox because we are considered in the lesser Orthodox tradition. You want to talk about lesser or greater? Hey, I don't see any Greeks. I don't see any Russian quarter. But I do see a Muslim quarter, a Christian quarter, a Jewish quarter, and you got the Armenian quarter. Wow. Okay. So it's something to look at, to learn from, to be informed about, to educate ourselves about. And I don't want to use the word pride. I don't want to say it's something to be proud of. Certainly it is in some respect, but of course that kind of pride is useless unless we could put it to action. So let's understand it and then see what action we could gain from it. How does that place us within the Christian world? But also, how does that place us within our own lives? And the reason why I'm saying this is I want to go on this popular notion that we've heard so often, and I know you've heard it, people who say that, well, I'm not religious, but I'm very spiritual. I'm a spiritual person. I'm a Christian. I understand. I believe in Jesus. I believe in his principles, but I don't go to church. And you got to remember that everything we know about Jesus Christ has come to us because of the church. Even the Holy Scriptures, yes, inspired by God, but they took form, they were put together, they were put on pages, they were printed, they were scribes taking them, they were put together because of the church. Got to remember at the time of the resurrection, there was no Bible, But there was a church. Jesus says, I will establish my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So in other words, Jesus has declared that this is the body. This is what's going to continue on. After I leave you, I'm with you till the end of the ages. But after I'm gone from this earth, you should know that I'm with you. And the church, the kingdom of heaven on earth, is right now. It's happening right now. And so, consider this as a primer on the Armenian Church, how it functions, how it works. And, you know, we've talked a lot about our personal faith. It takes place within the context of a structure. And I know when we talk about Armodoxy, I've always talked about, can we, you know, take away some of the trimmings and understand what the faith is about, but remember that that faith has arrived to us via a structure, via this infrastructure we call this church. So let's understand that, and I think we'll understand how the message has gotten to us better, okay? So go back to in time. Let's go back to the first church. The first early Christian church was the community that assembled on the resurrection. They saw the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And right after that, there was the sightings of Jesus at many, many different locations, as is reported in Holy Scripture. And 40 days later, he ascends to heaven. And on the 50th day, Pentecost, we see the birth of the church when the Holy Spirit descends. And you could read about this in the book of Acts. The Holy Spirit descends on the apostles, and they become, actually that word apostles means ones who have been sent. Say they get sent out to different areas, and two of them, one of them Thaddeus in the year 40, just half a decade after the resurrection of Jesus, enters into Armenia, and then about a decade later, after the resurrection, is St. Bartholomew come into Armenia bringing in this good news. Christ has resurrected. Just as the other apostles went to the other cities and evangelized. St. Paul, most of his evangelism is recorded in what we call the New Testament, but we call the Bible. In the Bible, you find the accounts of St. Paul within the different communities at Thessalonica and Corinth. Now, this early Christian community had structure. It got together and realized that it needed structure if it was going to survive. So when you read the book of Acts, chapter 6, the first deacons were selected to help the apostles in the ministry. And slowly, an infrastructure started developing. Now, each of these apostles who had gone to different lands, they were setting up churches, they were ordaining new bishops, new priests, new presbyters, new people to continue on the mission. And this is very important. Apostolic succession. It's also important, the idea of ordination, laying on of the hands and giving that power to new recruitees, new people who would carry on the mission. Now we have different churches. A lot of them delineated because of languages, because of cultures, because of ethnic makeup, right? In Armenia, you had a church developing, but also that Armenian land was not a safe land. So you had Armenians being thrown out many times, even though we remember Etchmiadzin as the center of Armenian Christianity in 301, where St. Gregory sees the Jesus Christ descending. That's the center is in Etchmiadzin. But since then, 10 times the Holy See was moved around because there was a danger on the life of the people, on the life of the Catholicos, the church itself. And the church has gone into different areas. Now, the church today, let's now fast forward, okay? Do you understand fast forward and rewind? It just occurred to me. We don't have cassettes. We don't have analog playback anymore. I think new digital generation will not understand fast forward, rewind, right? Do they? Yeah, okay. I can see it. Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, if you think about a rewind button, okay, it sounds like this. I know. It's very analog, but that's the way we go, backwards and forwards. You kind of like look in a continuum. And I think about that for a moment, because if you think digitally, you don't need to get from the year zero to 2013. You don't need to go through 1750 or 1340. Basically, you just could just go. It's random access, right? Go right to 2013. But if you think analog, you know, you kind of got to sift through, go through all that. So I'm challenging you to make the digital jump to 2013. Okay, here we are, 2013. You've got Armenians living in all parts of the world. You've got your main center in Etchmiadzin. But you also have what are called dioceses. And according to Holy Scripture, we have bishops who are overseers over the presbyters, over the priests. And so each bishop has a unique diocese. A diocese is a collection of parishes. So, of course, any organization has, you know, its satellite units. And the church has dioceses throughout the world. And each diocese is made up of parishes. The parish priest is the head of a parish. The diocesan primate, or the bishop of that diocese, he's the overseer of that diocese, looks over those churches and consecrates the new priests and gets them ready to continue the mission. Now, each of these dioceses fall under a unique jurisdiction of a Catholicos. Now, in Armenian, we have this office, Catholicos. In the Roman Catholic Church, there is the Pope. Now, the Pope is a little bit different in that the Pope is not consecrated. In the Armenian Church, we consecrate the Catholicos. In other words, it is one more degree that is given, so to speak, one more rank. Scripturally, we have the ranks of deacon, priest, and bishop. All of the others that you hear about, archbishop, archpriest, archdeacon, archimandrite, whatever these are all additions. These are all honors. Some of them are honors. But basically, your three ranks are deacon, priest, and bishop. Now, we Armenians have added a fourth rank, which is Catholicos, and it's a rank because it is consecrated. Catholicos is consecrated. And throughout history, we've had occasion where there have been three, four Catholicos because of uncertainty within the homeland. Back in the 1800s, there was a Catholicos of Ahtamar, beautiful area around Lake Van. And today there are two Catholicoi. One is in Etchmiadzin, the Catholicos of all Armenians, and one is in Beirut. One is in Beirut, and he is the Catholicos, what's called the Great House of Cilicia. Of course, there is no Cilicia, and I don't think there's a house there, but the basic title is the Great House of Cilicia. And he's a Catholicos. He's a Catholicos. In other words, he's in charge of dioceses. He's on top of dioceses. And the Catholicos of all Armenians has dioceses that report to him. Now, within that structure, each of those dioceses has bishops or sometimes archbishops. Remember, arch is given as an honorary title. It is not a rank. So they are all bishops. Okay, so each diocese has a bishop that runs it. Now, we have also two unique cases, and these are because these two areas are historical sites. One of them is Jerusalem, and one of them is Istanbul, or traditionally called Constantinople. And both of these places have historical value. So the archbishop who resides, who is in charge of one of these patriarchates, is called a patriarch. He is not a separate, he is not a separately consecrated position. In other words, he's not a Catholicos, and nor is he any higher than a bishop. It's just that a bishop who may be the head of a diocese will be referred to as a primate. The bishop who is the head of a patriarchate will be referred to as a patriarch. Okay, is your head spinning from this? No, I'm telling you because it's important. It's important to realize that there is structure in all of this. There is structure and there's rhyme and reason. Because people report to one another and people need to find a way of unifying the mission and the message. And that's something that within the Armenian Church has been really kind of difficult, scattered, especially after the Armenian Genocide of 1915. Basically, when the Turks wanted to do away with the Armenians, eliminate the Armenians, they went after the church because they realized that the church held everybody together. And so the church after 1915, I've said this many times, our church, we refer to it as a 2,000-year-old or 1,700-year-old institution since the time of St. Gregory the Illuminator. It's really basically a 90-95-year-old institution, basically on the ruins of genocide coming up and being the resurrected people. And so right now, just finding itself. And I found this back in 2009 when I had the good fortune of going to Armenia. And comparing it to when I was a student there back in the communist days, and just seeing how vibrant the church has become, how the new generation of priests are reacting to their faith and reacting to the church, to the people, to the congregations. It warms your heart because you know that Christ is alive. You can try to do away with him through a genocide. You can try to do away with him through communism, but he is there. And the reason why he is there is not because Bibles came into the hands of people. It's because the church kept alive. It's very easy to look and criticize. Okay, let's go back to the early part of today's podcast. You can look and find the negativity in a lot of stuff. But it's important to find the positive stuff. And as we greet a new patriarch at Jerusalem, it's important to realize that all of this has meaning. It has purpose. It's not just something that's thrown out there. You could say all you want that, you know, I'm a spiritual person, I'm a follower of Jesus, but I don't believe in church. Well, it doesn't work that way. You got Jesus because of the church. And that church has meaning, it has structure, it has a form, and you follow that. And so when we look at Jerusalem, when you look at Etchmiadzin, sure, when we talk about Armodoxy, we're trying to strip away all the excesses that are out there, but not touch the church. The church is the sacred body of Jesus Christ. That's in Scripture. That's in history. That is reality. That is what Jesus Christ commands us to be a part of. Come and be a part of my body. By this they will know that you are my children, by the love that you have. Okay, so you have love, but you need to practice that within a community. And that community, of course, is his body. It's the church. We're going to take a break right now. I've got Anush with her pomegranate seeds, an interesting story for today, and we will be back in just a couple minutes.
A separation of church and state? Okay, where do I start? After last week's MLK retreat and presidential inauguration, I was left with a lot of food for thought and a new hopefulness for our country. I came back refreshed and renewed, but over the course of this past week, I've heard so many negative comments about the ceremony itself and just general negativity about this presidency. It's been a big energy suck, seriously. This past Sunday at church, we had a visiting priest, an abbot from one of the churches in Armenia. As he gave his sermon, I couldn't help but connect the attitudes regarding our church and the attitudes regarding our country. Father Ospet is assigned to a small parish in Armenia. Since most of the older adult population grew up under the communist regime, he didn't have many in his congregation that were true believers, but he was happy to report about the children. He had 22 children coming to Sunday school, a handful of altar servers, and a children's choir. He was hopeful, but he reported that most people that come to his church view the church as a museum, some antique building to visit, and what unnerved him was that the people that came to visit were very critical of the church, complaining that the grounds could use maintenance or that the place looked run down, to which he would respond to them, "Excuse me, who are you to come here and criticize? I've never even seen you here." He went on to remind us that the church was not his or the country's, but it belonged to all of us, and it was up to all of us to take care of it, whether we had the blessing of financial ability, or we could volunteer our voices in the choir or serve on the altar, or if we could help with physical maintenance. We should all understand that these talents are entrusted to us by God and that we should use them to His glory. Okay, a simple message, right? Take care of what is entrusted to you by God. It's up to you to take care of it. And so then, what about our country? What about our world? For those of us that are blessed to live in the United States or in any democratic society that allows us to vote for our leaders, whether you agree with your elected officials or not, it's still our country. We are entrusted to take care of it, to make the best of what we have, and if not, to use our talents to bring about change to make it better for everyone, not just sit back and bash and badmouth. When I got home from Big Bear last weekend, I had asked a friend of mine if he had watched the inauguration. The response was no, that he wouldn't want to watch it. I went on to tell him what he had missed, the prayers, the poem, the music, the president's speech. His response was that the president has speechwriters who write the speech for him, and therefore it's not sincere, and that, oh, by the way, Beyoncé lip-synced the national anthem of all things. How could she? Really? Okay, so he didn't view the ceremony, yet he knew all about it from various media outlets. And to be clear, it wasn't the fact that he didn't watch it that upset me. Certainly, everyone has the right to choose what they want to do with their time, what they want to watch. But what upset me was that this person's negative and preconceived speculation on the programming was based on what he didn't even watch, but based on his political bias. Our country was built by the sweat of our people. People who work together for these United States. Every 4 years, we elect a president. Your political party either wins or loses. Are we like the people that come to visit the little church in Armenia, detached and removed by choice, and then filled with negativity and complaints, failing to see that this country belongs to all of us, and it's up to all of us to make use of our God-given talents to make it great? We learned last week at our retreat that we can make change happen. It requires patience, persistence, hope, prayer, but more than anything, change requires action. It's easy to sit back and criticize. I, too, am not happy with our president's first term, but I am hopeful that this term will be better. If we're not happy with the current situation, then we can work together to make it better. And it's okay to complain because we shouldn't just sit back and drink the Kool-Aid, but we should at least be informed on what we're complaining about and then work toward fixing it. Is this democratic system that was created to unite us and give us a voice creating separation and complacency among us? I pray that we can set aside political party bias and prejudice and use everything in our ability to make things better for all. The office of president is a difficult and challenging one for anyone, no matter what their party affiliation. Let's pray that God grant our president the wisdom to lead our nation toward peace and prosperity, and also pray that he gives us the courage and wisdom to judge a man not by his political party, but by the content of his actions. And then, after that informed judgment is made, to create in us the passion and fire to either work toward implementing those programs or create new ones that are better. Finally, I'll leave you with a quote I read from one of our past presidents, Franklin Roosevelt. "There are many ways of going forward, but only one way of standing still." Let's work together to move beyond our prejudices and work to achieve our highest potential. And let's do it together. This is Anush, wishing you a pomegranate day, ripe with possibilities and filled with an abundance of blessings.
Thank you, Onish. Beautiful story. I like it. You know, see how it all flows together? See how it all comes together, right? Talking about the negativity. Why are we looking at the negative stuff? Let's think about some of the positive. Let's highlight that positive. It's got to think about hope, about dreams. Onish, each of your stories gives us a lot of hope. Thank you so much. And also, thank you for referring to the priests that came to our church. People are going to get excited. They're going to say, what's going on over there? I mean, you got a... You got Chris Brown coming. You've got these guest priests coming from Armenia. Actually, who he was, this priest was the abbot father from a monastery called in Hakhbad. I've never been there, but it's according to Father Osped, he said that it is closer to Tiflis, the capital of Georgia, than it is to Yerevan. So it must be up there in the hills, on the borders. But the pictures are just beautiful, just beautiful. Let me see if I could dig up a link to the pictures of the monastery. We'll make sure that we put it on our show notes as well. And also, Onish's blogs, do check them out. We do put a link on our show notes. It is Inside the Pomegranate. She does an audio blog once a week here on this show, but she writes quite a bit. And so you may want to check out some of her writings. They are, well, like I said, we'll put a link on our show notes today. We are at the end of today's show, and I want to thank you for joining us today. We talked here and there, but it was about structure, about putting things together, about looking at the good and realizing that, yes, we do have structure. There is reason for that structure. There is reason for organization. Sometimes we shy away from using the word business because we think of business as something that makes money. Really, business is just a way and a means of organizing. You know, when you have a business, you are organized. You are organized around a model, around a theme, around a mission. And certainly when it comes to the church, you've got to be talking in terms like that because it's the way that you bring people together. It is the way that it becomes cohesive. At the center of that business, at the center of that model is Jesus Christ. The words that he spoke, his salvation, the eternal word of the Father, and the way to get that message out, to get that eternal word to the people, is, well, you need structure, you need feet, you need hands, you need flyers, you need TV stations, you need apostle, you need ministries to get that out. And that takes structure, and that takes means, and that takes capital. Well, you got it. Okay, so you start building on that. The most important thing is never lose sight of what the goal is. And if there's anything that we could be accused of, that's probably number one. When we lose sight of what the goal is the salvation of the soul. The goal is to bring Jesus Christ's message of faith, hope, and love, to bring that peace, eternal peace, into the hearts of people so that there can be everlasting peace here in this world, in the lives of humankind. That's it. That's it. Love one another. That's what Jesus said. And so all of this structure that we put together, this big church that we've organized, it's all about getting that love in the hands of people. Okay, well, we are at the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us today. Do check us out during the week. We'll check out our show notes. That's a good place to start out. But you can also check us out on epostle.net. Next few weeks, we'll be starting up the Lenten season. And, of course, we're going to have new programming there. If you're in the Glendale area, do stop by Sunday morning. You'll meet a great group of people. We are at the corner of Stocker and Kenilworth. And of course, join us at the Mothership In His Shoes, where we'll have links to all kinds of stuff in hisshoes.org. For the wonderful team who put today's show together for us, for Susie, our producer, for Anush with her Inside the Pomegranate insight, for Vahed doing our website, this is Father Vasquez inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.